This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's podcast is a clinical focus podcast that I'm going to do solo. I was originally planning on having a guest, Dr. Jolene Brighton, who's written a book entitled Healing Your Body Naturally After Childbirth, The New Mom's Guide to Navigating the Fourth Trimester. And I was very much looking forward to talking to her, but then discovered upon confirming the podcast earlier today, I got an email from her husband saying that unfortunately she'd been involved in an automobile accident and she was suffering from TBI, traumatic brain injury. So she's going to be out of commission for a while. She's very anxious to do the program with us and she'll soon recover and has promised to join us later in 2017. So we'll put that one on the back burner for a while. And I'm in the process of writing a chapter for a book on functional medicine. That means kind of the natural integrative medicine that we talk about here on Intelligent Medicine. I refer to it as intelligent medicine, the right way to go in terms of treating diseases first with natural treatments in lieu of conventional treatments that are often just Band-Aids and quick fixes, temporary rescues of patients who then go back to their lifestyles and end up in trouble. So the chapter that they assigned me, because I'm eclectic, I do a lot of things, is on gastrointestinal disorders and the relationship of the GI tract to diseases in general. And so this is on my mind, and I thought I'd share with you a little bit of a simplified version of what I've been talking about in this chapter, which, you know, actually directed at health professionals. You know, when the book is out, you may want to shell out a couple hundred bucks to buy an academic text that probably is going to find its way into mostly research libraries and maybe a few discerning private collectors, people who are really into this. But mostly it's an academic book. So I'm going to try and translate it into just basic concepts that or news that you can use. And, you know, I start with a proposition that, as enunciated by Hippocrates, who's considered the father of medicine, an ancient Greek physician, 2,500 years ago, he said, quote, all disease begins in the gut. And really, this was the foundation of traditional medical systems. They acknowledged the primacy of the gut. Many remedies, if you look back into the Egyptians, the ancient Greeks, the Romans, the Middle Ages, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, Tibetan medicine, ancient medical systems relied on remedies that were, in many cases, purgatives to expel toxins and harmful humors from the digestive tract, which were thought to be a trigger for disease. And of course, you know, this is in lieu of understanding the germ theory, many of the insights that we've obtained through the scientific revolution. With the scientific revolution, you know, it was actually prohibited before the scientific revolution in many cultures, including in the West, to desecrate bodies by dissecting them. So we kind of guessed on what was going on inside the body. So when they first began dissections, and you see, you know, go to museums, you look at old medical texts, you see wonderful anatomical drawings by folks like Vesalius, who's one of the fathers of anatomy in the 1500s, 1600s, or Leonardo da Vinci. And they literally got to cut up the body. And what they discovered when they looked inside the stomach is that it was a tube. Roughly speaking, it could be traced from mouth to anus. And so it was an anatomical tube. And then with the advent of science, what they determined is that the gut was merely what is called an alimentary canal. It's a food tube that basically takes in nutrients, processes them, and then turns them into a waste product. And with little function except as a mere conduit for nutrients and as a means of excreting them. But with the scientific revolution, there was some blowback. And in fact, a few months ago, I believe it was last year or the year before, we interviewed the author of a book on a guy named Eli Metchnikoff, who ignited a scientific controversy at the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century, when he began to implicate bacterial toxins, so-called auto-intoxication by harmful bacteria in the gut as being the cause of many diseases. And actually, he's thought to be the father of yogurt. He's not really, because traditional cultures embraced yogurt, but he repopularized yogurt in the early 20th century as a means of achieving health. And this is also accompanied by popular reform movements like those of John Harvey Kellogg, you know, Kellogg's cornflakes. Well, originally the idea was to get people off traditional American diets, which were salt beef and salt pork and, lots and lots of lard, and put them on high fiber diets. And of course, the rolling mill allowed him to make cereal. John Harvey Kellogg was a little over the top. And he advocated these health spas where people participated in enemas and heavy-duty detox and fasting to avert something that was popularly referred to as toxemia. And surgeons got on board with this. They were kind of radical in those days. They even proposed colectomies, cutting out the colon to take care of auto-intoxication that was a presumed cause of something called melancholia, which now, of course, is referred to as depression. So imagine, your eccentric surgeon, they didn't know what to do with it. I guess they could put you in a straitjacket or, dump you in an ice water bath or electrocute you with primitive electrical apparatus in those days. But some surgeons actually performed colon removal, colectomies on patients to get rid of melancholia. So this is a little nuts. It was happening in the early 1900s. Because of these excesses, this is thought to be pretty unscientific, the pendulum swung back, and there was a repudiation of this notion. And I went back to a medical journal, the British Medical Journal, in 1912, where a famed pediatric surgeon stated, quote, "Auto-intoxication, the term as we commonly use it, is significant of nothing but a sort of mental flatulency." I love that term, mental flatulency, on the part of the user as a substitute for thought. And so therefore, they kind of shut down inquiry on the role of the gut in terms of its primacy in many conditions, mental disorders, many physical disorders. But as often happens in science, now, finally, the pendulum is swinging back. And we are now recognizing the importance of the microbiome. So the gut is more than just this alimentary canal, conduit for food and waste. It houses the microbiome, which actually has 10 times as many cells as our bodies have. There's more inhabitants of our gut than we have cells. And interestingly, they may have hundreds of times more genetic material than we have. Actually, by comparison, we're rather a simple organism with not a lot of leeway for genetic coding. And the bacteria within our guts possess a great deal of genetic information that actually is in some ways communicated to us and part and parcel of what makes us. So I recently attended a lecture by Alessio Fasano, who is a guy who's a real expert on celiac disease. And he's a wonderful lecturer. And he coined a phrase, a meme, which you might have heard by now, which is the following. The gut is not like Las Vegas. What happens there doesn't stay there. And I think that's very clever, because what that suggests is that there are things going on in the gastrointestinal tract that have profound impacts, not just on whether you're going to have reflux, belching, burping, gas, bloating, constipation, spasm, or even ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, but what's happening in your GI tract may have a profound impact on many things that are going on in your body. And that's what I'm going to talk about. The microbiome is what lies within the anatomical gut. It consists of communities of bacteria and even fungi and viruses. And we tend to think of yeast as bad, but actually there are maybe beneficial yeasts that we don't want to destroy. And these colonizers, these bugs that hitch a ride within us, actually make essential nutrients for us. They signal to our immune system to make it stronger or more balanced. They perform detoxifying function. They influence metabolism, which may have an impact on our weight or susceptibility to diabetes and metabolic syndrome. And they even influence neurotransmitters that can affect our brain function and mood. And they affect hormones. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. The microbiome is really essential, because we know from experiments they raise animals that have no bacteria in their intestinal tract. They're called germ-free animals. And they're useful to study, because then we can take them and we can introduce certain bacteria in their GI tracts and study the effects of that. But what's interesting about germ-free animals, they don't do very well. They get sick. They don't grow normally. They have a lot of problems, because without the essential microbiome to support their health, they have a lot of trouble. And so, you know, why is the microbiome an issue for modern man? Well, there are a lot of things that happen in Western civilization, in advanced industrialized countries, that undermines the microbiome. And actually, some of this has been happening over just the past two or three generations. We've seen a real undermining of the integrity of what is, in effect, an organ. I mean, it may consist of tens of billions of cells, but it's actually an organ that has many, many functions. And we're damaging our microbiome in several ways. One, do C-sections. And when you do a C-section, you come out the stomach instead of coming out the vaginal canal. Coming out the vaginal canal actually primes the infant's gastrointestinal tract with good bacteria, or bacteria that are supposed to be in the initially sterile GI tract of babies. Babies start out tabula rasa, but they're quickly inoculated with bacteria that they need to start life through a passage through the non-sterile vaginal canal. C-section may change that priming. In addition, when you don't breastfeed, you don't introduce beneficial bacteria from the mom, which are directly transferred by skin contact. But in addition, breast milk contains some factors that are not even nutritional for baby. They're not, you know, we tend to think, oh, it's protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Well, it contains certain immune priming substances, but it also contains some non-nutritive fuels for bacterial growth. So it's very essential that babies get breastfed early to help with the population of bacteria in their gastrointestinal tract. So then we administer antibiotics, often to very young children. They get ear infections. We sometimes, and I'm hearing this more and more, kids have GERD or reflux. They're given acid blockers. Well, when you take an acid blocker, that changes the balance in your intestinal tract. We drink chlorinated and fluoridated water. Well, chlorine is designed to have an antibacterial effect. That may change or alter the bacterial balance. We use foods that are modern foods, Very different from the foods that our ancestors consumed. We don't get enough fiber, which is a food for good bacteria. We also use certain things that damage the microbiome. We now know that artificial sweeteners may damage the microbiome. And that's one of the reasons why artificial sweeteners are thought to not just prevent weight gain, but actually encourage weight gain. Emulsifiers in foods may damage the mucus layer, which harbors helpful bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract, and therefore have a negative impact on the microbiome. When the microbiome is disturbed, we call this dysbiosis. And dysbiosis may have a lot of consequences. So to turn the conventional paradigm literally on its head, the GI tract is not just a pipe or a conduit for nutrients and feces, but it's a carefully engineered housing for an important organ, the microbiome, which in itself may well deserve the status of an independent organ with multiple functions. So what are some of the impacts of the microbiome on health? And I'll try and, you know, give you a quick summary, because the amount of research on this, it's just exploding. There's just voluminous information on the relationship between the microbiome and virtually all aspects of health. And it's almost as if the floodgates have opened on this type of research. And one of the reasons is that we have better techniques for analyzing the microbiome. It used to be, well, you know, you get some stool, you put it on a plate, and you see what bacteria grow. Now we have something called these omic testing capabilities with high throughput analysis, where literally you can find out about thousands of species of bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract. And it used to be very expensive. The cost of this is going way down. It's a little bit like the way we're sequencing the human genome. We're sequencing the human microbiome, and we're beginning to relate it to diseases, and it's becoming easier and easier to do studies, and doctors are climbing on board. So first of all, let's look at the impact of the GI tract on immunity. So we know from animals that don't have bacteria, the so-called germ-free animals, so they get sick a lot. They're very susceptible to illness. Now you might think, well, that's great, you know, sterilize everything, and you know, you live in a hermetically sealed room like Howard Hughes in his later years when he kind of went crazy. If you saw the movie or read his bio, he was a germ phobe, and he was always sick. You know, using disinfectants, you know, another way to damage the microbiome. The bacteria actually help to prime the immune system. We call this, to some extent, the hygiene hypothesis, is that if you're not exposed to certain bacteria, pathogens, even viruses, in early life, your immune system will be sort of weak and flabby. You need, it's almost like, you know, when you get a new computer that isn't pre-equipped with software, you've got to go out and download software. Well, that's how the immune system senses the environment. And actually, the analogy is appropriate because we talk about computer viruses, but at the same time, you know, there are beneficial programs and there are harmful programs, and you got to firewall yourself against the harmful stuff and adopt the beneficial stuff and cultivate it in your gastrointestinal tract, just as you're programming your own home computer, iPad, or mobile device. So with apps and so on, but hopefully not, you know, spyware or malware. So the presence of these microbes provides necessary stimulation to the intestinal immune system. And then you get a better immunity, not just in your gastrointestinal tract, but throughout your body. So the proof of this is that clinical studies in humans suggests that there is an effect of probiotic supplementation on infectious disease susceptibility. They have actually shown that the frequency and duration of upper respiratory infections were reduced with oral probiotics. All right? So I think one of the studies was looking at office workers in, I believe it was one of the Scandinavian countries, and they have a certain rate of absenteeism where it's attributable to colds and infections. And what they did is they took a select group of them, and the only intervention was they gave them daily probiotics. And what they found is there was a statistically significant reduction in the number of days that they had to take off because of colds. And I think this has also been demonstrated in children. So that's one aspect of the immune system is fighting things off. Another aspect of the immune system is when the immune system turns against itself. And that's called autoimmunity. And they've actually shown that dysbiosis, or an imbalance of intestinal bacteria, is associated with production of what are called cytokines. There are good cytokines, but there are also bad cytokines, cytokines that stimulate the immune system in a way that predisposes to autoimmunity. Researchers showed in mice that certain bacteria could cause autoimmunity that is similar to lupus and systemic sclerosis. These are autoimmune diseases in humans. And MS patients, that's an autoimmune disorder of the brain, the central nervous system, when they analyzed their microbiome, they were found to have reduced levels of good bacteria, which ordinarily are derived from diets high in healthy fiber. MS patients, children with MS, had different intestinal bacteria than those without MS. There is an impact. And, you know, one of the ways that there's thought to be an impact of the gut on autoimmunity, the model is celiac disease. So what happens in celiac disease? Well, in celiac disease, you have inflammation in the gut wall, and that will cause sometimes obvious symptoms of diarrhea, and patients, you know, who have long-standing celiac disease may be emaciated because their gastrointestinal tract doesn't absorb very well. The villi, the absorptive surface of the gastrointestinal tract, is damaged. Not always. Some of the patients are overweight, but, you know, a classic patient with celiac disease that's gone on for too long, undiagnosed, looks emaciated and weak. But the other thing that happens in celiac disease is that what happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. It goes beyond the gut. And celiac disease can cause autoimmunity. It can cause autoimmune thyroid problems. They're highly associated. It can cause other types of autoimmune problems, joint problems, skin problems, inflammatory skin problems, which is, you have to admit, the skin is very far away from the gut. What's happening is that the tight junctions, which normally keep bad things out on the absorptive surface of the intestines, these tight junctions are damaged and they open up, and you develop what's called leaky gut syndrome or increased intestinal permeability. And that's a model for how not just gluten in celiac disease, but dysbiosis in general. You don't actually have to have celiac disease for this to happen with food intolerances or dysbiosis. You can have leaky gut syndrome, which can then lead to problems like rheumatoid arthritis, MS, any kind of autoimmune-itis. Maybe a trigger. They actually have some studies on ankylosing spondylitis and psoriatic arthritis that suggests that it's the gap junctions in the intestine that are damaged, and toxins or antigens go into the systemic circulation and travel to wherever the damage is going to occur. And a local reaction occurs. The immune system is, in effect, set on fire by the presence of these foreign materials. And then you have an autoimmune condition. So clearly, there's a relationship between the microbiome and immunity, both when immunity is faltering and too weak to fight off things, and or when it's overexuberant and causing the body to attack itself. Okay, now let's pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, and we're going to give you a chance to catch your breath and me a chance to take a sip of decaf. And when we return, we're going to talk further about the impact of the microbiome on many, many health conditions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.